This is 94.7 WPVC Resistance Radio, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Welcome to our second episode of Apropos of Something, airing every Saturday morning from 10 to 11, co-hosted by me, Ellen Daniels, in our Charlottesville studio, and Nancy Lawrence coming to you from New York City.
Yes, I am. I am right here. Gotten off the Seaville bus. That's what, whenever I hear that music, we've been doing this for years, but whenever I hear that music, I feel like I'm back on a Greyhound leaning on the glass, driving over to the studio. Anyway, okay. Please.
I just wanted to add, the reason we're doing this is because we are in queasy times, and they call for humor and information while they're still allowed. And on our shows, we're going to cover hot issues with a focus on world events, but especially Charlottesville's resistance efforts. And speaking of that, today we're going to talk with Indivisible Charlottesville co-founders Ken Horn and Leanne Fox, and also Trey Crowder and Corey Ryan Forster. You may know Trey as the liberal redneck from his hilarious YouTube videos. So, Nancy, one thing I didn't mention to you, I got tons of letters at the station asking this one burning question.
That you have tons of letters, I don't even care what the question is. I hope it has something to do with nothing. Anyway,
well, I really just got one question on my personal Facebook page, but it was, how do we even know each other?
I'm hoping you can answer that. I don't even remember.
Oh,
how
come
we
on.
Know each other.
We know each other from high school, and I think that's all we really need to say about that. But for that one person who wanted to know.
That is a file, right, that my attorney said that you and I are not supposed to be speaking about on air for fear that all sorts of lawsuits,
like
the president will ensue. So, yes, it is true. I'm confirming we do know each other from high school, yes.
Okay. And I wanted to plug our theme music, legally speaking of legal matters I need to do. It's by Springtide. They're out of Japan. The very interesting title is N35-40-19-800, and it's from the album This Is the End. How appropriate. But I want to say it's the end of business as usual. And before we talk to our guests, I wanted to let people know about some activism events going on in Charlottesville. And I just heard just now that Surge is having an event which is standing up for racial justice at 10 a.m. in Lee Park. To protest a Facebook Live event that the Trump people, that's all, I don't have the details on that, the Trump Virginia director is putting on, and our Indivisible guests can maybe give us a little more information about that. Tomorrow, Sunday, February 12th, Together Seaville is having their weekly potluck featuring Jefferson Area CHIP, Children's Health Improvement Program, 5:30 to 7 in Ix Park. Wednesday, February 15th, Surge is having an education to action event called End the War on Black People. They'll be talking about the Movement for Black Lives platform at the Seaville Central Library downtown, 7 to 8:30. That's Wednesday. So we are also very grateful for the sponsorship here at 94.7 on Apropos of Something from the Beckham team at Keller Williams Realty. So we have an amazing show today. We were lucky enough to be able to talk to Indivisible Charlottesville co-founders, Ken Horn and Leanne Fox. Ken is an artist, father, and clinical social worker based in Charlottesville. He is particularly concerned about the Trump agenda's attack on basic decency, civil liberties, and the environment. And Leanne Fox is a former political operative turned stay-at-home mom. She and her family live in Crozet.
Are they there?
Yep, they're here. Say hi.
Okay, cool.
Hi, Nancy. Hi, Ellen. Thank you for having us on.
Hello. Thank you so much.
Oh, good. Okay, good. Good. Excellent. I don't know why I am more concerned about the audio since I have no effect on it. I just wanted to make sure. Anyway, I'm glad you guys are here. I know you're busy because there's no such thing as a slow news day anymore. So thank you both for coming in. If I may ask, starting at the beginning, what is Indivisible, and if you could give us a little background on its origins.
Yeah, thank you. Indivisible is a guide that came out written by former congressional staffers with just a bunch of really specific details and strategies for how to put pressure on your elected officials. And so it's kind of based off some of the tactics that the Tea Party used fairly successfully during the Obama administration. So we're kind of flipping it and using some of those strategies for our purposes. And so locally, we started a chapter. There are, I think there's something like 7,000 or so now around the country. But the goal is to resist the Trump agenda through putting pressure on elected officials, specifically here in the 5th District in Virginia. And, you know, with an emphasis on inclusivity, we want it to be a very open effort.
And, you know, I know it's local. That's what you guys are doing. So, Leanne, you first. You know, what is your role at the Seville Indivisible?
That's a really good question, because we're still in the process, essentially, of figuring out who does what. Because, like you were saying, there's no such thing as a slow news day, and there's so much work to be done.
No.
So right now, I work in the capacity. I work on the media team, so doing media projects and some press coverage. And I'm on one of the outreach teams that's reaching out to different organizations in and near Charlottesville to try to make sure that our efforts are coordinated and that we're at least sort of on the same page as we each organization pursues their own strategy. And Ken and I both actually are working with some local artists to try to harness some of that creative energy to help, you know, facilitate more resistance to Trump. So, and then I'll let Ken.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for doing my job. Yes.
Yeah. So, I think we're, like she said, we're still trying to get that figured out, but I'm very excited about the fact that we're just kind of starting to branch out into getting some committees going to cover, to really bring in our members to get more involved. Those that want to do more than just phone calls or showing up at events, there's so much more that can be done. So we're really putting effort into, reaching out to volunteers and the membership, and specifically Leanne and I are going to be working with local artists that want to help with visuals and videos and, you know, all that can be done in that realm in terms of getting our message across and engaging the media and engaging the community and our elected officials.
And actually, Ken just said something that I think I want to go into a little more detail about. We're trying to be inclusive in every way, and that means making sure that people who have a lot of time and energy to give, that they can do, you know, commit actions and go to events that they're really comfortable participating in. But some people just, you know, they can't make events or they can't show up physically at a certain time, but they still have this energy and they still want to help resist the Trump, agenda. And we want to give them opportunities where they can be a part of this movement and they can feel really empowered too.
How can people, are you letting people who are listening participate? I mean, when you talk about artists, can anyone just write to you and say, I have some art to share?
Well, they certainly can. And why don't it would be great to just plug how people get looped in with us. We've got a Facebook page, and that is at Indivisible Charlottesville. That's where we post a lot of our events, actions, information. We also have a Twitter account, which is at Indivisible VA05, which we're quite active on there. And you can also get on our listserv if you just want to contact us about art or any other outreach or skills you might have. You can email indivisiblecharlottesville@gmail.com with listserv in the subject line and just say you want to be added or send a message, and that's how to get in touch with us.
Thank you. I just want to remind anyone who may have just tuned in that you're listening to 94.7 WPVC Resistance Radio, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and this is apropos of something. We're talking with Indivisible Charlottesville co-founders Leanne Fox and Ken Horn.
And, you know, I know you, I was going to ask you this a little bit later, but since you've mentioned it, and I'm happy to hear that the membership has already grown, how much has it grown, and what, you know, is there, can you describe this cross-section of people that are, you know, taking advantage of all those media platforms that you just shouted out to both of you, please? I know, I'm sorry. Ken, there, sorry.
Do you have a good answer?
I do apologize, I do. I know, I can't see you. Go ahead.
There's no eye contact.
I was just, when I joined in the steering committee a couple weeks ago, it was the day of our inaugural meeting, and I expected like 60 to 70 people to show up at this inaugural meeting. And it was around 500 people who showed up at a meeting, and you always have fewer people at a physical event than you do who are really interested in joining a movement, like online or by phone. So that was the first sign to me that this could be a really powerful movement. But Ken, I think you're more familiar with the details and numbers, so I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah. Well, I know that our last two events, we've been holding Tuesday events at Rep. Garrett's office. We do have a Republican representative here in Charlottesville, and that's important. We want everyone to know we are holding weekly events there on Tuesdays at 12 noon. We've had about 200, 250 people show up just for those kind of very quickly planned rallies. I do not have the numbers. I think our Facebook page has well over 1,000.
Over 3,000.
Over 3,000. Okay.
Yeah.
So we've been quite pleased with the attention, but we just want to keep growing it as much as we can.
Right. I think our perspective on the matter is that these logistical details that present themselves at the beginning, they're a real challenge to get around, but this is a problem we are thrilled to have. We are so excited that so many people want to join us and show up and call members of Congress and hold them accountable.
How many times have you been to your, you know, the VA lawmakers that are, you know, in your district? How often have you been there?
As far as the big...
And actually, sorry, before I forget, do they see you, you know, there, sorry.
Yeah, so the last 2 weeks, we have held the rallies on Tuesdays at noon. It's been over 200 people both times, plus multiple media outlets there to cover. And yes, people go up in groups of maybe 15, 20 at a time into the office and speak with the staff and sign the guest book and deliver signed testimonials about their concerns about healthcare, about immigration and Trump's ban. So the two events, one was about healthcare, saving the ACA, Obamacare, and the second event was a pro-immigration rally kind of in opposition to Trump's ban and our local representative Garrett's basically full support of the ban. He came out and announced that he was in support of it. So, yes, they see us. Garrett himself has been up in Washington, and we are trying to get a town hall. We've been requesting that. He has not agreed to have one yet, but we're continuing to put the pressure on. We think as his constituents, we deserve that, and we need to talk with him in person. So, you know, we'd like to see him in person, but so far it's just his local staff.
Did you want to mention what's happening right now at his office? Did you mention that yet?
No, we could.
Yeah.
So right now, reproductive rights, our human right, is an event going on. It's a pro-choice, pro-planned Planned Parenthood rally at Rep. Garrett's office. It's 9:30 to 11, and he's at 686 Berkmar Circle. And I think, as you were saying, it would be great to get to know that address, because I know I've been at the last two events. And I have to say, I was really moved, unexpectedly moved at the events. You don't expect to go to a rally, at least I guess I'm inexperienced in doing rallies, but it was educational and really moving. People are always sharing stories that are personal, and it was really a great thing to do, even just for your own education.
Right. I think there's real power in that. When you go to an event or a rally and then people just sort of spontaneously get up and share personal stories, it's very empowering for them, and it makes you feel like you're part of a community. And I think right now these times can be very dark and frustrating, so when you're around people who are feeling the same way, that gives you more energy to keep going, because this can be really... really challenging, you know, and we're going to lose a lot of battles in the next couple years. And so I think having that community and actively being a part of it is really, really important.
And is your the division that you're, you know, the Charlottesville division, sorry, do you ever, or do you see the future for working with other regional indivisible groups? Is that something you guys talk about, or have you already done that?
That's definitely going on. The last event actually was kind of a co-effort with the Nelson County Indivisible Group. They were coming about healthcare the week after we came about healthcare, and we were there for immigration, but we just all joined in together. I mean, we all have so many kind of co-occurring concerns. But yeah, there are indivisible groups popping up all over the 5th District, and we are in touch with them. Yes, definitely. That's one of our main goals, is to spread well out beyond Charlottesville, Albemarle, into areas that maybe aren't as progressive or didn't necessarily vote Democratic. because there are people popping up all throughout the district that are concerned.
And I think that plays into our second principle of inclusivity, because there are people already who have approached me and us as a group talking about how they voted for Trump, or they are Tea Partiers and they're feeling betrayed right now. We want them to feel comfortable joining our movement and working against this agenda, because it's going to affect everyone.
Yes. Yes, it is. Why am I laughing?
Just because you're so sad, Lynn, that's all you can
do. I do need to address each of you individually. Obviously, both of you, though, have deep concerns and causes that you're committed to. So I do want to ask if there are one or two, what is closest to your heart? Sorry, what is most meaningful to you that you're busy doing every minute?
There are a couple things, actually. When Trump announced his candidacy, he declared that all Mexicans were murderers and rapists. And I didn't take him seriously then, because I thought it was just an outrageous thing and he would never get very far. But clearly he has. And the rise of sort of casual racism and white supremacy really, really, really bothers me. And this is a different issue, but the Affordable Care Act, my family benefits from that. So those are the two issues mm-hmm. that I'm really concerned about the most. And I have to say that personally, I have two really young children. And part of my motivation in resisting Trump's agenda is just so that they don't think that's normal and acceptable. Like, they have to be a part of a community that is actively standing up so that they can, you know, so that they can grow up and do that themselves in the future. So that's what really bothers me.
Yeah. And Ken, sure.
Yeah, I agree. I have two young children also, and I think that has a lot to do with, that's kind of the lens through which I see all of what's going on. I kind of project 5 years, 10 years, 20 years into their future, and I think how scary and how sad it is. So I would say I'm a social worker. I work every day with people who depend on Medicare, Medicaid, and I also worked in the ER previously at UVA, and I know what it looks like when people don't have insurance, when they use the ER as their primary care. And I know that the cost of that falls to the people and the taxpayers, and it's inefficient and ineffective. It does not work for the system. So healthcare is huge. The immigration ban too, I just think it's so inhumane and un-American at the same time that it is making us less safe and is being used as anti-American propaganda. I mean, it's just so clear. So many experts and leaders are warning of that. And the other piece for me is the environment. I just cannot wrap my head around the number of science deniers that are now in control of our government. And I just think it's completely out of control.
Just want to say, for anyone who's just tuned in, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC Resistance Radio, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're talking with Indivisible Charlottesville's co-founders, Ken Horn and Leanne Fox, and this is apropos of something.
And, considering the pace of this administration, do you look that far in the future to plan protests, or do you really just look towards tomorrow, since, you know, it is really so constant with these guys?
It really is. It's like it is incredibly difficult to keep pace with everything, but we do try to have long-term strategy, I think.
We do.
So we have, right now we're meeting as a leadership committee once every week, and we're always trying to keep the focus on the long game. You know, this year, 2017, is an election year in Virginia, and we can't let people forget that. Local politics and state politics are incredibly important, and so we can't sort of let people focus on how terrifying the Trump administration is and forget that we have to elect a progressive governor and all other progressive offices. And we're also talking about 2018, but at the same time, you know, every week there's something that we have to respond to. So it's a balancing game, and it can be a challenge.
Totally.
So I think we're coming up. Nance.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Ellen, please.
Okay. Sorry. We're coming up on a hard break. So we'll come back and we'll continue to talk with Indivisible Charlottesville, Ken and Leanne. And then also I wanted to say that coming up in a little bit later, just a few minutes probably, we're going to have Trey Crowder and Corey Ryan Forrester talking about their Liberal Redneck Manifesto, a book that they're doing in the Well-Read Comedy Tour. So we'll be right back after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Apropos of Something on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We have a couple minutes left with our great guests from Indivisible Charlottesville, Ken Horn and Leanne Fox. So I think, Ken, you wanted to bring something up. Let us know what that is.
Yes, I just wanted to make sure everybody is aware that this coming Tuesday, we are having our next Tuesdays with Tom action at his office. And this Tuesday is Valentine's Day. It's February 14th. So we are having a special Valentine's Day special where we want to see lots of red construction paper hearts. We want people to make Tom a Valentine, maybe talk about something that a stance he's taken that maybe breaks your heart. Maybe you think Tom has been heartless for talking about wanting to repeal the ACA or due to his stance on the immigration ban. Or it could be more about what you love about the ACA, what you love about diversity in our country and our history of immigration. So those are just some ideas, but we really want people to show up with some good visuals, and it'll be Tuesday at 12 noon at Rep. Garrett's office, which the address is 686 Berkmar Circle. And I'd encourage you to get on Facebook and our listserv and for further details.
And if you can't make the event, feel free to show up on your own time when it's convenient for you. Just you're a member of Congress also, and you have a right to communicate with him. You're his constituent. So drop your own Valentine off. If you can't make our noon event, just go in sometime later the day or give him a call.
That is great advice, because I know some people, it's not convenient to go during the middle if they're working or for other reasons. So I love that idea. Just show up there. Thank you. So thanks again for coming. We're going to turn now to our next guests, Trey Crowder and Corey Ryan Forrester. They co-wrote, along with Drew Morgan, the Liberal Redneck Manifesto, Dragon Dixie Out of the Dark. That's available wherever books are sold. It's in hardcover, digital, and the audio version is read by the authors. We will be giving away a signed copy at the end of the show, and we're going to do it as a little contest. So we'll ask a question at the end of the show to see if you've been paying attention to this coming up interview. And what you'll do is go to the station website, which is 947wpvc.org, but you can't do it until 11:05 Eastern time, and write an answer on the message, message us the answer to that question. Do you think that was clear, Nancy?
I am wondering, Ellen, is it not the Facebook page, she said.
Yeah, I probably should have said that. So you go to the station page, and then it's going to be abundantly clear where the Facebook page is from there. Just click it, and then you'll be on the Facebook page.
Okay.
I see in front of me some people that I'm so excited to talk to. It's Trey Crowder and Corey Ryan Forrester.
Hello.
Hi. You're on a well-read tour. I just want to talk just a little bit about that. It is sold out completely. Mm-hmm. So I heard that...
Yep, so we're here to promote the show.
Thank you. So doubly thank you for being here. But we are going to, I say we, but you are going to add Richmond and Virginia Beach show, Dates to be Determined, and that information will be on wellreadcomedy.com, and that's red spelled like the red state. wellreadcomedy.com. Mm-hmm.
That's right, yeah.
We are hilarious.
It's always a little weird doing these spots whenever the show is sold out, because it kind of feels like, yeah, you probably like it. You should come check it out. You can't, but maybe next time if you want
to. Is that Southern hospitality?
Yeah.
We'd love to see you outside after the show.
Yeah.
I know friends are just going to stand there just hoping and with signs saying, please give me a ticket. Is there any hope for them?
Yeah, that happens sometimes.
Yeah, I think so.
If you go to the Facebook event page, a lot of times somebody will have a babysitter issue and they'll throw them up like, hey, you know, I got two if somebody needs them. And our fans are pretty good about stuff like that.
Cool.
Have you two actually reached scalper status? Is this happening?
Yeah, actually, surprisingly, one of my friends has sent me links before, like, look, your tickets are going for $75 on Craigslist. Well, that's cool.
Goodness.
I've also seen, that is wild to me, and I've also seen people like, you might take a page out of this book, 94.7, but I've seen radio stations like giving them away and stuff on Twitter, you know what I mean? I'd be the fifth person to call in to get, and I'm always like, well, that's so weird to me still.
Yeah, we don't feel too far removed from just doing bar shows and getting paid $20 and peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
well, because we're not.
You actually have a signed book at the end of this, right? It is,
yes.
You've looked at it, right? It is signed. It is legit.
Do you have a book?
We have a book. Do you mean like with us, or are you talking about that we have written? Because we've written a book.
I know you wrote a book, and it's, yeah. Let me say, it's hilarious.
Thank you.
And I really want to get the audio to hear you guys reading it. But the point is, did you bring one? Because we I think we have a spare we could do. We wanted to give that away.
Just signed one in there.
I don't know who's that.
Okay, cool. Okay.
That's it. Thanks, Nance. Always keeping me on track.
Always being litigious. You're welcome. You're welcome. You're welcome. And does it say, actually, this is on my mind because you are on time, and I am wondering, gentlemen, does it say in your manifesto to really do early morning radio appearances? Because it's quite outstanding, both of us, that you're here this early. Is it in there somewhere?
I haven't slept yet.
Are you adding it in later?
Yeah, that one. That we didn't put this part in there.
No.
This is just something that comedians. It's like morning radio is a thing amongst comedians. Actually, every comedian knows about it. It's a thing you just sort of have to do. Not that we're not happy to be here, but yeah, it's part of. I mean, it's a part of the job. So, in fact, I mean, 10:30 or whatever. This ain't bad at all. A lot of times it's morning drive time, 7 a.m. or whatever type stuff, and that truly sucks.
Yeah. Ellen and I were discussing the idea of what does dead air sound like. So, again, thank you both for showing up. And my first question is to both of you, Trey and Corey. So Corey, because I have yet to direct anything direct to you. How did you guys meet, you know, for this in general, whether book or tour?
Well, we met actually about 6.5 years ago or something like that, just doing stand-up. The club, I'm from Chattanooga, Tennessee, and Trey, Knoxville, or the surrounding areas at least, and how it works, it's not like New York City everywhere where there's a club here, a club there, a club here. It's like the two closest clubs from where we are is in Chattanooga and Knoxville. It's 1.5 hours apart. So he would come to my club, I'd go to his club, and we kind of just heard each other, and we're like, oh, wow, you know, we have similar viewpoints and accents, which is weird around here. So we immediately gravitated towards each other, and also we're both fat, lazy slobs.
There's that, too.
I can attest to none of that. Well, I don't know about the slob part. You're not really fat.
Well, thank you. You're sweet.
Did the tour come? Did the book? Which did one come before the other as far as what you guys were thinking of doing collaboratively?
Well, thinking about doing this, we've been thinking about all of this literally every day since we met 6.5 years ago.
The book.
Well, no, that's true.
We didn't think we'd get the opportunity to write a book when we did, and so that kind of came out of nowhere, but we were very, very pumped about, you know, we were like, holy, they're really going to let us write a book. You know what I mean? But the tour, though, we have been fantasizing about, daydreaming about, whatever, for, I mean, years. So the minute that we thought it might be an actual reality, we were like, it was pretty high on the priority list.
So we're talking to Trey Crowder and Corey Ryan Forster here on 94.7 WPVC Resistance Radio, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm Ellen Daniels. We're talking with my co-host, Nancy Lawrence. And what else did I want to say, Nancy, about that?
I can't read your mind.
I know. We're switching roles today. But you can go ahead with what...
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have one more about this book. I was just, you alluded, Corey, to New York City, and I was wondering if this book meeting, the Simon & Schuster meeting, did you two have, you know, was it a meeting at Simon & Schuster in New York City and all of that blueness? How did your deal get made?
Over the phone.
Yeah.
A lot of things do with us. Conference call. Now, our buddy Drew does currently live in New York, but no, nobody. There was no meeting. Honestly, we were on the road. We were already in the middle of touring when all that happened. I mean, it all kind of happened at once, but we were in the middle of touring, and we were just taking a lot of conference calls, pitching ideas, and yada, 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 and then it just kind of happened, and we actually wrote the book while we were on the road. We've been going nonstop for, it's getting close to a year now.
Mm-hmm. It'll be a year. From when this all really started, it'll be a year at the end of April. But the first actual week of the tour was the last week of May.
Yeah.
So
that Congratulations on never even having to make FaceTime with wow, that's very impressive. And about the red and the blue, do you in your routines in the stuff that you do on stage, do you tailor any jokes in or out when you are in a red city or a blue city?
No.
Does it matter?
No, not you got like you have to realize for the most part, other than the, you know, stray, you know, couple of spouses who got drugged there by their significant other or whatever, most of the people at our shows are, they know what they're signing up for when they walk in the door. So, like, it, and that's true in Birmingham, Alabama, just as much as it is in Portland, Oregon. You know what I mean? So, like, it's, we don't really have that problem, luckily. And that's, honestly, that's kind of what every comedian dreams about. We're really lucky in that way, knowing, like, having our crowd or whatever everywhere we go,
which aside from, I mean, that is true, but I can also say that we still have never
wouldn't do that anyway.
We wouldn't do that, have never done that, right. I mean, I play shows where it's just me, it's not the well-read tour, and you know, some people don't exactly know who I am, and I'm still doing exactly my same, you know, what I want to do, I'm saying what I want to say, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter.
Gotcha. So hecklers are in your rearview mirror at this point? You don't have them?
We really don't during our show.
We've had a couple over the course of the whole tour.
Yeah, a couple, and that's, you know, and they're frequent in comedy clubs, but we haven't really dealt with it.
Do you remember one of those two, the woman in Savannah? Remember heckled me about?
She is a trait.
She got so mad about it, passionate about it.
It was the most liberal heckle I've ever heard in my life. She corrected him on
a historical fact that I referenced in a joke. I don't want to just sit here and just tell the joke or whatever because it'd be weird, but basically I referenced that, which apparently is a misquote, but that's not the point of the joke, but that Marie Antoinette thing about, you know, let them eat cake or whatever.
Right.
And I referenced that in a joke, and this lady immediately, as soon as I said it, she was like, "She never said that.
She never said that.
And then she would not let it go. I was like, okay, fine. Doesn't really matter, you know. And then I'd try to move on in a little bit. She'd be like, you know, you should check your facts. She never said that or whatever. So like, no, you know, and that's literally about as bad as we've gotten.
My girlfriend was there, and after the show, got drunk and cussed that lady out. So that, that put a stop to that.
I forgot about that. That did happen.
She was plowed.
She sure was.
She deserved it.
Yeah, she will not hear this, right?
No.
Okay.
No chance.
Well, when you go back home to your respective homes, do you get, are you as accepted as you are when you do your comedy in front of fans that know your stuff? Do you get the side eye at the store? Do people, you know, are you welcome because you're local?
I mean, I definitely get the side eye. There's a whole lot of people in my hometown praying for me, for sure. You know? A whole lot.
And I know how you feel about prayer.
Well, no, I mean, like, you know, just for the record, when people are say they're, you know, they'll be praying for you, whatever, when some, like, tragedy befalls you or whatever, I'm not one of those non-religious people who is, like, mean about that, because I know that's coming from a good place, so, hey, whatever, pray, right. You know, I accept your prayers. That's fine. It's fine. It's also fine because I also am doing nothing real about it, so it's fine. You know, I have no problem with doing that. But this is right. This is people praying for, like, my soul because I'm on the path of darkness or whatever else. So all that, I mean, yeah, to hell with them. They obviously agree, but in reverse. But like, but I've noticed though, it is starting to swing a little bit in the other direction because my hometown, Salina, Tennessee, it's such a small town. Everybody knows everybody. Everybody talks about stuff all the time. So I'm kept up to date on this sort of thing by, like, you know, my uncle or my sister or whoever. And I do think it's starting to come back around, meaning, like, the more, I mean, I don't know how else to say it. Basically, the bigger I get, the more they are becoming, like, you know, he's a hometown boy. So it's like, they still hate everything I'm saying, but they ain't got much else to talk about, I guess. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but it does. It seems to be swinging a little bit.
Yeah, that's kind of, it's kind of the same for me. I mean, I do get the side eye a little bit. I know there's a lot of people talking, However, that didn't stop all of them from coming to my Super Bowl party last week. So, but I mean, I think they're all they're genuinely proud of someone in their area, you know, making it and stuff. But yeah, at the same time, they don't agree with a word coming out of my mouth, which is fine. I don't agree with them either. So,
are your families, you know, aside from the other residents around, for both of you, and I guess Corey, you first, is your family leaning left, or are you the breakout star?
No, I'm the breakout star in that aspect. But my dad, I've never really been able to take his temperature politically, really. I don't think he voted this year. I mean, he definitely said a lot of, you know, Trump's got some good ideas, you know, that type of stuff. But dad's also, throughout my life, has been fairly socially liberal. Like, my dad is one of the best dudes that I know, and my mom too, but my dad but mom's a little bit more cold than dad, but dad my dad is one of the most giving people. He's one of the most helpful people to everybody I know. So I'm not they're not Nazis, I guess, but yeah, I'm definitely.
We have so little time. That's the division right there. Yeah. That's the line we want to know. Okay, got it. Okay, they're not Nazis. Understood.
Now, for me, actually, so I was raised by a single father, basically, my dad, and my dad, that side of my family, my dad's kind of the OG liberal redneck, really, and that side of my family is they're all Democrats from way back, and they all are pretty much on board with me. Like, if my grandpa was still alive, he would
not have the internet, so it wouldn't matter.
Right, well, he died before Obama and everything, but like, he voted for Clinton before that. He hated George Bush, whatever else. So like, I don't know where he'd stand, because I mean, he was still also kind of old school Southern about some stuff. But other than that, I mean, my immediate family, they're pretty much on board. And then my mom, who wasn't around a whole lot because she was a drug addict. So like, her and her addict friends, they weren't sitting around the pipe talking about foreign policy. You know what I mean? Like, they were just sort of apolitical, you know.
Oh, I think it's time for a break. Before we go, I just want to let people know we're talking with Trey Crowder and Corey Ryan Forrester. They have written a book along with Drew Morgan called The Liberal Redneck Manifesto, Dragon Dixie Out of the Dark. They're on the Well-Read Tour here in Charlottesville. We're sold out here, but Richmond and Virginia Beach will be getting some shows, dates to be determined. You can look on the website, wellreadcomedy.com. When we come back, we'll continue talking. Welcome back. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, Resistance Radio. This is Apropos of Something with your host, myself, Ellen Daniels, and Nancy Lawrence in New York City. We're talking with Trey Crowder and Corey Ryan Forrester. They have written the book, The Liberal Redneck Manifesto, Dragon Dixie Out of the Dark, and they're on tour currently. Hey, Nancy, are you there?
I am.
Oh, fantastic.
I was reading your mind, and I was distracted. I'm sorry.
There's so much going on there.
I should stop doing that on the air. So about the book that you just mentioned, I do have a question about that. That title itself, Corey, give our listeners, I know there's more than one, some ways that you drag Dixie out of the dark.
Well, first off, encouraging them to read. That certainly helps.
Oh, so you're a fan of you're not a fan of Betsy DeVos, obviously.
No, not. Yeah. Is it DeVos or DeVoe?
Oh my goodness! Look at you.
Well,
how to use the S. I have no idea.
Well, no,
I'm obviously under her spell already. I don't know.
Well, the reason I ask is because like, it's a capital D, then a capital V. It seems like it'd be like a DeVoe, but then I heard Bill Maher say DeVos, but I've heard somebody else say DeVoe. So I have no. Who cares? We don't even have to talk about her.
Okay.
No, not a huge.
Amen, sister.
I'm not a huge fan of her because first off, because my girlfriend, the drunk one that beat up a heckler, she's also a second grade teacher. So, she's just a peach.
So diverse.
She is. I mean, you know, to me, it's. First off, we said this before, if you're going to drag them out, it's because they're going to be kicking and screaming. But it, I don't know, learning empathy and just being able to see another side. And really, I think the most important part is hanging out with people that don't look or sound like you. That's mm-hmm. really helped me throughout my life.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like now I'm in a suit and tie. And Trey, what are some ways that you would like to drag Dixie out of the dark?
Well, aside from what Corey said, which I agree with all that, I think also the South has a pretty big problem with living in the past too much. You know what I mean? And I think that is one of the first things that needs to stop. I'm talking about naming schools and parks and streets after Confederate generals and all that sort of thing that goes on, and the Confederate flag and all that kind of stuff is, you know, one of the first things that needs to end, basically. And then other than that, Corey pretty much said it.
Right. And I know there was a bit of one of your routines where you compare a Southerner, the things they're shameful of and things they're proud of.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was helpful for me. I know, anyway, so I was wondering if you remember any of that. I know you have, your routine is more than, you know, what I remember. So can you share some examples of that?
Well, the shame is a lot of the stuff that I was just saying, you know, the just all the crappy things that we've done or been responsible for over the years that we had to be ashamed of, going back to slavery. And then, you know, there's been no shortage of those things ever since then. And it still happens. You know, the South across the board voted for Donald Trump, which is something that I'm ashamed of, but not surprised by. But then the pride aspect of it is, you know, there's a lot to be proud of. I think we have a rich musical history in the South, food,
like slave songs,
right? Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, and that it that, you know, they do a lot of our music. Well, pretty much all of it comes from that,
and our food,
you know, and the food too. Which, but you know, I don't mean they don't hit. our food and our music are still great, sort of the Southern hospitality, which is a real thing, and like laid back atmosphere, and the weather, and the nature, and however, you know, it's beautiful down. I guess I'll say down here. I don't know. That's a question I have. Is this like Virginia, the state? I know, especially the southwestern part for sure is like absolutely the South. But like, is this the South here? Two people that live around here. Because, yeah. I mean, I don't know.
We
this is my first time being
in
here.
Book.
Right,
kinda
yeah.
Like
we can't.
DeVoe and DeVos. No, you know, I'm not
depends
sure.
on who you talk
well,
to.
Yeah, well, we are south of the Mason-Dixon line,
right.
So we're the South. But Charlottesville is a progressive town, so it doesn't always feel like it. But it is. I mean, I hung out in the North for most of my life, and to me, I feel like we're in the South. But then, you know, it would be, it's not like when people use the capital T, capital S, the South,
mm-hmm.
people are, they really feel like, you know,
it ain't
it's
the holler,
not,
you know.
It's not,
well,
the ho- yeah.
But see, like, so Asheville, North Carolina, I think is, without a doubt, that's in the South. And, I mean, it's a mountain town. So, like, it's, that's very much so the South, but it's also extremely progressive city or whatever. So, you know, it can be weird. And, well, in fact, I mean, honestly, most yeah. cities are pretty progressive. I mean, in our experience, Knoxville mm-hmm. is the mayor of Knoxville, where I lived for the past 6 years. The mayor of Knoxville is a Hispanic woman, you know, so like it's, I mean, cities are what they are.
Yeah, we've always chalked it up to it's not a North versus South thing. It's kind of a city.
Rural
city versus rural.
Yeah.
But living in the North, in New York City, for example, we didn't even refer to North and South. It is a big thing to talk about that divide here.
That's because people in New York think they're the only people who exist.
It's the center of the universe. Yeah. It's New York and everywhere else.
That's true.
But yeah, no, you're probably right. That's probably true.
I think I've acknowledged you two gentlemen quite enough. I mean, does that prove nothing? No, I'm kidding.
I used to live in New York, and it is absolutely my favorite city on earth. I was just being a butthead.
Yeah. I mean,
and I was just being a douchebag, you know, the way we are.
Oh, we can say douchebag.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
Way to go, Nancy.
Yeah. actually, is Trey and Corey, these names, I mean, why are you two not named Clint or Chip or Jimmy Don? Or how did you survive high school or grade school with Trey?
I was hot.
So, what was, keyword, he has fallen apart, as we both have. But now, this is something I think a lot of people don't realize. It's always like sort of a surprise to people, but this is 100% true. So my name, the only other Treys I've ever met or been aware of in my life who spell their name the way I do, T-R-A-E, are literally 100% of them black guys, and then me. And so, but what the part that people don't realize is white trash naming conventions and like black people naming conventions kind of overlap a lot of the time. Like, I went to school with a bunch of Keishas, Michaelas, Keelas, whatever, and literally these are all white girls. Every one of them are white. And then, like, my name is a black guy's name and whatever else. So, like, what I'm saying is my name actually is pretty trailer parky. if you know much about trailer parks, my name's right down the fairway. Corey Ryan Forrester, you know, sounds like a lawyer, but
you know what's funny is I actually am named after a black person. There was a little black kid on Johnny Carson, and my mom thought he was the cutest thing she'd ever seen. His name was Corey. He was a guest, and she's like, "That's what I'm naming my son."
Hilarious.
That's so funny.
Goodness, yes, that's incredible. And Corey, that's true. I was just focusing on the Corey, but yes, using your full middle name, you are an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So do you?
I like to think of it as an assassin.
Well, like the bad kind, not like a cool like spy novel assassin, like the guy that shot JFK. Yeah. The three named assassin.
They always would. Right. I like it too because every time our
names
are on,
Haley and you know. Lee Harvey Oswald, Corey Ryan Forrester.
Well, when our names are on the marquee, they always put mine in the middle, and it looks the biggest. So I'm sticking with it.
And I when you were, I know Corey, you started roughly anyway. You started when you were 16 years old. Did you?
Oh wow, you read.
Does her research.
This is your life. Uh-huh. So did you use the three names from the get go? Were you always?
Not right from the get go, but it's not. I didn't change it just for this tour. I've had it. I just always thought it sounded nice. A couple years ago, I was like, "Hey, Corey Ryan Forrester, that may be the career change I need to I need to go about." That's the change that needs to be made in my life.
That's not a, you know, that thinking of your future is always, you know.
Exactly.
Lived in these days, but what was it like for you when you were first performing at such a young age?
Well, I thought I was great, and I wasn't. I started at 16, but I had been wanting to do it since I was 5. So honestly, it seemed a little late for me. But yeah, I really thought I was like, okay, you know, 16, give me a couple years, I'll be on Saturday Night Live, I'll be doing this and I'll be doing that. But it turns out, if you only talk about your wiener for the first 4 years, it just doesn't really. And that's all I knew too. That's the thing, as a 16-year-old, I'm stupid now. At 16, it was bad. It was bad news.
Oh. Did you tell anyone when you started, or you know, or were you that spy that you referenced at the beginning?
Yeah, I have no shame. I did basically as soon as I was able to drive to an open mic. You know, it was on, and yeah, I told all my friends, and then I fell in love. And again, I thought I was good, but even if I didn't, I mean, I knew it's what I wanted to do from the jump. And again, I knew I wanted to do it when I was 5. Staying up with Dad, watching comedians on late night shows. I was like, "That's what I want to do. That's all I'm ever going to do. I don't care about anything else." And I skipped college and just kept doing stand up and went on the road. And then, you know, met Trey, and the rest is history for me.
That is impressive. And Trey, when you started doing those videos on the porch for the Liberal Redneck, was it your intent that it would become the character that it is?
Well, I mean. I it's kind of hard to say because, like, I don't feel like anybody expects what actually has happened to me. You know what I mean? Like, it's so crazy in every way that, like, I think I don't think anybody could really sit there and be like, yeah, yeah, I totally knew. You know, that's a, this is exactly what I planned for. But, I mean, at the same time, because I was a comedian already. I've been a comedian for 6.5 years, you know, as Corey mentioned earlier. And, like, I had been talking about making those videos for a minute, like, to Corey and Drew or whoever else. And they were always like, yeah, you should, you idiot. Why don't you do it? And, I mean, like, the context of those conversations was always like, yeah, you should. That might be a thing that, you know, works or whatever. Like, I mean, you don't, as a comic or any kind of artist, I guess, I don't think you do something like that without hoping, at least, that people respond to it.
Right.
You know, so, like, I mean, yeah, I definitely wanted people to watch them and people to like them. But did I expect that it would, like, change my entire life top to bottom the way that they have? I mean, no, I did not see that coming.
I want a chance to talk about the book giveaway before we go off the air. We're talking with Trey Crowder, Corey Ryan Forrester. They wrote a really great, hilarious book called The Liberal Redneck Manifesto, Dragging Dixie Out of the Dark. And so we're going to ask, I'm going to ask a question right now to see if you've been paying attention. And what you'll do to win that signed book is go to the station website, webpage 947wpvc.org. You'll see the Facebook icon to click on, and then message us no earlier than 11:05 Eastern time and write the answer to this question, which is, during our discussion, we talked about some hecklers or a heckler, and there was a famous person mentioned about some fact that was corrected. So which famous person was that? Again, go to 947wpvc.org, then find the Facebook page and message us right after 11:05.
I am totally going to win that book. I remember that.
You're not allowed.
No, I'm kidding.
And I wanted to mention the station again, that we're Resistance Radio and the progressive voice of Charlottesville, WPVC 94.7.
So do I have another?
Give a minute. I also want to mention this is our second show, Nancy, together. It's really fun. It's called Apropos of Something. We'll be here every Saturday at 10 from 10 to 11 in the mornings.
That is true.
Yes,
you're being here.
You're free to talk.
Okay, cool. Because Trey, I wanted, speaking of looking at research, I understand that you work at the Department of Energy, and
yeah.
I'm sure you get this question all the time, but what was it like for you to work at the Department of Energy?
Well, when I worked there, the Secretary of Energy was at first Stephen Chu, who's a Nobel Prize-winning physicist from Stanford,
yes.
And then after that was Ernest Moniz, who's the head of head of energy and physics at MIT, and now it's Rick Perry. So, like, it was fine. I mean, look, it was a desk job at the end of the day, and I wanted to be a comedian, so I was not satisfied with it. But, like, I felt good about most of the stuff that we were doing, though. Like, I mean,
sure.
I didn't feel guilty. I didn't feel like I was working for, like, you know, Halliburton or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like the thing, because I worked in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and that's a DOE Office of Science location. So it was all, like, science-based missions or whatever. And, like, you know, I felt morally or whatever, I felt pretty good about it. And also, I always felt like the people in charge knew what they were doing. And then now, that's one of my biggest reliefs retroactively with everything that's happened with me, is that I did not have to work for Rick Perry, which I would be. I've been getting emails like from Rick Perry's office if I was still at my old job right now, and I'm so glad that I don't have to do that.
Was it like a West Wing environment back then, how was it?
No, again, and where I worked, it was like, it was a, like, boring office job type.
It really was. Okay.
Atmosphere. Now, when we go up to D.C. to, like, headquarters, whatever, everybody up there thought they were in the West Wing. Like, they all have a very high sense of what they're doing and how important it all is, and so they kind of walk around like they're in the West Wing, but it's not. Like, it's kind of just airs they put on, really.
I got you. So then about the YouTube videos, which I interrupted asking you about, how many people are involved with making those? The ones on your porch, even, I'm talking
just
about.
Really just me. I run them by Corey before I post them, say, hey, what do you think about this? And he'll say either, this one part I think you should cut down, or here's a funny tag you could add right here or whatever, and we'll add it. That's about it, though. Other than that, it's pretty much all me.
Gotcha. Thank you. Thank you both so much. Thank I can tell what that music means. I really appreciate it.
Thank you,
great
ladies.
Talking to you.
Thanks for having
us. Yeah, thank you so much. We're thrilled to talk to you. Again, Trey Crowder, Corey Ryan Forster here in the studio at 94.7 WPVC Resistance Radio, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm Ellen Daniels. Nancy Lawrence is my co-host on Apropos of Something. We'll be with you on Saturdays at 10 in the morning right here. Thank you again so much. Thanks, Nancy.
Oh, thank you. See you later.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
Yep.